I'm very happy now to welcome Suzanne Lederer. She is the director of the play The Lion in Winter, which is opening tonight at the Santa Fe Playhouse. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. I appreciate being here.
So I went to the dress rehearsal the other night, and this is a play which I suppose can be compared to historical fiction in some ways, or even maybe Shakespeare's histories.
I think actually it can. One of the reasons I'm attracted to the play is because it has such a classical feeling to it, although it was written by James Goldman originally in 1964 and then done on Broadway in 1966. But certainly the actors that play the characters in it, Henry II, also known as Henry Plantagenet, King of England, and Eleanor of Aquitaine, need to have classical training in their background or they simply can't handle the language.
And yet the language is very contemporary.
Yes, very.
So this is a play, Henry II and Eleanor of Aquitaine, and of course I had to go to look up who these people were and when they lived, but the action of the play takes place in 1183.
1183, that's right.
And there is the king, Henry II, his three sons, the queen, Eleanor of Aquitaine, whom he has imprisoned.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's really, among other things, a highly dysfunctional family.
It is. What I admire about the way the playwright has written each of the characters is that they're all issue-driven. They all have their reasons why they behave the way that they do. And ultimately, yes, we could judge it and say, oh, what a dysfunctional family. On the other hand, I think we also feel tremendous compassion for the individuals because none of the characters are really wrong for the time and for the nature of the situations that they are dealing with, which are reflective of many situations we face today. They're all right in their attitudes. They all have justification for what they do.
So the king has these three sons. He's also lost a fourth son, who was, I guess, originally supposed to succeed him. And so now it's the question of which of these three sons is going to succeed him, if any.
Yes.
And I was staggered by the amount of lying and deception. I mean, every time, especially in the first half of the first act, every time somebody said something, I said, oh, okay, well, that's what's true. And it turned out not to be. I mean, the way of seeing life as just one giant ongoing chessboard
was
unbelievable.
Yes, it's absolutely correct. And defining the play as a chessboard game is one of the ways that we looked at the material originally when we began to rehearse the text itself. You're absolutely correct, Mary Charlotte. My husband is a businessman, and he's excellent at business negotiation. And when he read the play, he said, I can't believe what a wonderful take James Goldman has on strategy and negotiation. And so I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, he started to explain to me the ins and outs and how you present particular your own point and the information that you give or do not give in order to get from your opponent, because every negotiation is a game. Someone has to, it's a win or lose. How you phrase things, how you present things, so that you give as little information about yourself as possible or your point or your perspective, and you get information from the other person so you know where your next move is to go. And James Goldman has constructed the dialogue in the play to be reflective of magnificent negotiation and strategy. So what I had my husband Joshua Freilich do is to prepare a dissertation for my company. And he came in with printout in hand to educate my cast on the art of negotiation. None of these things did any of them know, because they've all been trained as actors, and I have a very mixed company. I have some very young actors. My youngest is 17, and he's still a high school student. And my oldest is you know, older, my Henry, for instance, and my Eleanor, adults who had never been in a situation where they had to learn strategy and negotiation before. And everyone was fascinated by the game playing that goes on, the intelligence and the cleverness that it takes, and the idea that you have to keep one step ahead of the person that you're negotiating with. And there's a very particular ways to go about it. And it's in the play, and it's ultimately very amazing and interesting. Yeah.
And it certainly translates into contemporary politics and
yes.
contemporary business. And I think the thing that is shocking and fascinating at the same time for the viewer of the play is that this is within a family.
Yes, right. That's right. And one of the things that makes the play have such an edge to it is that it does mix politics with family and demonstrates how difficult it is for families who have a tremendous amount of power, kings, queens, people with perhaps with simply lots and lots of money, who are very powerful, a political figure certainly, have to continuously try to integrate a family life into their business, which is politics. And it's very, very difficult because ultimately, especially when you're dealing with royalty, for instance, in 1183, politics have to win out over family. And I think it makes us pause and think, you know, how much of our business lives do we devote just to business and tell our children just a second and suffer for it later on. It's a very difficult balance. But Lion in Winter is amazing in terms of how it expresses that difficult part of life, balancing family and power.
And I think probably a lot of people who are attending a play like this in Santa Fe and who are listening to this show right now and so on might say, gosh, I also have a problem balancing family and business life. But actually using your children as pawns
yes.
in your business life or in your political life mm-hmm. takes it to another level. And I found the lack of love and then the expectation of loyalty anyway when you didn't
yes.
love your children really
yes.
something to behold.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's a difference between loving your parents and respecting your parents. And because we're dealing with a family of royalty, there is no question but that the children are expected to respect the position that their father holds, certainly, and also that of their mother, but particularly that of their father, because they're dealing with hierarchy at this point. But, you know, it's love me, little lamb, or leave me, basically. It's very confusing for the boys on an emotional level when they also know that they have to function on a political level. So how the boys are choosing to function in their adult lives when we come in into contact with them during the course of the play really varies, and it adds such an intense personal approach to a political background that it becomes tremendously, dramatically, and theatrically engaging for any audience to take a look at. I mean, honestly, not only because people think, oh, it's a period drama, I want to go see that, you know, I'll drag my husband, but honestly and truly, male and female audiences are crazy about this play, which is one of the reasons why it's had such longevity. And I would certainly highly suggest it for teenagers as well.
Yeah, the character of Henry II is, in some ways, although I can't say that, this is me personally, I can't say that I liked anybody in the whole drama,
really?
with the possible exception of the young woman,
Alice,
who was in love with King Henry. The character of Henry is very poignant because he is aging. He's extremely powerful. He knows that his power is going to wane and he's going to die. And he's very concerned. He would love to keep it forever. He would love to be
That's
immortal.
Right.
And at the same time, he really wants to have a legacy. And that question of what you actually can live and what you can expect to go on beyond your lifetime, it's not made explicit, but it's there the whole time in the drama.
That's right. It is. And actually, by the end of the play, nothing is decided. I mean, that's kind of the surprise of the whole thing. You've lived out these amazing situations with this particular group of people, and there are only seven characters in it. But at the end, nothing has been decided. None of the boys have been, you know, chosen. And but we know that Henry will invite Eleanor back again Easter. Because since the play takes place at Christmas, he says, Easter time, you know, I'll let you out again. And we know that they're going to start again until they make some sort of a decision, which, of course, eventually is made. And the oldest son historically does become king. He's Richard the Lionheart.
Richard the Lionheart.
That's right.
And so you assembled this amazing cast of actors
yes.
to play in The Lion in Winter, which, yes. by the way, opens tonight. We're talking to directors Suzanne Lederer. How did you go about casting? I mean, for a play like this, casting is perhaps the one most important set of decisions you have to make.
Absolutely. I'm extremely judicious. It took me 10.5 weeks to cast this play. I searched. I really, really searched, and I was very lucky, very, very fortunate to find a magnificent Henry, William Vertiber, wonderful classical actor, lots of experience, and just a delight to work with, and Elena Warren Zachary, a very experienced, trained, excellent, wonderful person,
playing Eleanor.
Fabulous actress playing Eleanor, and yes, I when I was casting, I never had them read together. But I knew that they would make a good couple. It was something that I felt. But I read people in Santa Fe, in Albuquerque. I even, at one point, early on, called some friends of mine who are fabulous actors back in New York, and I said, would you come and play my Eleanor and Henry? And at that point, they were unable to, but I was reaching out everywhere, and I'm just so glad that I found who I did. And then I found wonderful young people, which is very unusual in Santa Fe, not only young people who could handle the material, but young people who were available and not, you know, involved in doing something else, such as going
play.
To school in their school show, that I actually have princes who are the appropriate ages. My youngest prince is 17, Ian Spruill from Desert Academy. He's a junior there, and he's just terrific. And then I have Kevin Atkinson, who graduated not long ago from the College of Santa Fe.
Which has a marvelous... I don't know if I should say has or had, probably still does, a marvelous theater program.
Yes, absolutely. And this Kevin, who plays the middle son, Jeffrey, and Sterling Pratt, who is a graduate of St. John's College, with quite a bit of theater experience behind him as well, who plays my Richard. And then I found a wonderful Philip as the King of France, a pertinent role. It's Marcus Voter, and my Alice, who's also just wonderful.
She's
amazing.
Fantastic.
She's fantastic and beautiful and talented, and I'm just so glad to have her, who is Anne Roser. And most of these people have never been on... They've never appeared on stage before together. It's a whole new crew.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not that there isn't a good variety of actors in Santa Fe, but going to community theater or local theater... After a while, it starts to be what you might call the usual suspects.
That's right.
Which isn't a bad thing, but this play is completely different.
Yes, it is, and it's freshly cast, shall we say, and it's a beautiful group to look at. I certainly say that, and very talented, and they all make it very exciting. And then I was also blessed with having a wonderful set designer who just happened into Santa Fe for a few months and looking for something to do.
Nice.
Yes, he's designed for Disney, and he's designed for Ringling Brothers, as a matter of fact, too. And he helped me do an entire new look for the theater area, the stage space at the Playhouse, and a fabulous lighting designer, Skip Rappaport, and my costume designer, Kim Norgaard Vivian, who always knocks herself out to make things look as beautiful as possible. So I have a wonderful team of people that I'm working with. Jeffrey Tarnoff is doing my sound. And
now, this whole question of combining a medieval with a contemporary set of
yes.
characters and dramas and so on, you have them dressed in contemporary clothing.
I do.
They're speaking in a very contemporary, 1960s, but it really is a kind of classical contemporary
yeah.
speech. When you look at the drama and then you look at the history that it's drawn from, how close do you think they are?
I think they're extremely close. I think that's what allows me to put them in contemporary dress, because the issues of, as I said, of power, politics, love, passion, filial obligation, strategy, negotiation, children, parents, sons, mothers, sons, fathers, is so pertinent and universal that that Goldman's script allowed me to transport it and put it in modern dress. And it translates beautifully. It was a leap of faith that I made in my own vision goes, I've never seen the play ever done this way before. People see Lion in Winter, they go, oh, must be long dresses and pointed shoes and tights and feathered hats. Not this time.
At the same time, the long, lush tapestries and so on do give you a sense of some kind of palace or whatever.
Yes, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to get rid of the wing space in terms of blocking it to the audience's view. So instead, with this production, Steve Mitchell and I decided to completely take out as much as possible in the stage area that was blocking the audience's view, and we're back to the bare walls, and we even use the doors that lead directly into the backstage and dressing room area as our entrances and exits. I rake the stage, which means it's on a tilt, which gives it a slightly surreal feel, and then we replicated an English shield into a mural and became the logo for the show, which I hope people have seen on the postcards and the posters around town. But it's a combination of the English and French. The English shield was a combination of the fleur-de-lis of the French and the lions of the Plantagenet dynasty.
Yeah, it's a great design. Yeah. Now, you have a long and distinguished acting career yourself. Mm-hmm. You're directing now. Do you miss acting? Do you plan to do more acting soon?
I'd love to do some more acting soon. It depends on the opportunity. I try to take advantage of the best situation that I can. I've been acting longer than I've been directing, certainly. And I started out as an actor. And it wasn't until many years later that my vision opened up and I was able to see a larger picture other than how I would fit into an ensemble or where my character fit into a particular script. But I am an actor first. I look forward to doing more.
I saw you when I was in high school and you were a professional actor. I just realized that when I came across some old programs that I dug out of a box, and there you are. It's very strange. But this play, The Lion in Winter, is considered by many to be kind of an actor's play. Actors love acting in it.
Yeah, they do. Excuse me. Each of the characters is so amazingly well drawn. There are only seven characters in it, and each one is complete. Each has a beginning, middle, and end. Everyone has a high point. Everybody's got a great speech. None of the characters are there purely for plot revelation, it's beautifully written. And I think that's the first thing that drew me to the script when I was in high school. As a matter of fact, it's been one of my favorite plays forever, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to be working on it now.
Suzanne Lederer is the director of The Lion in Winter, which opens tonight at the Santa Fe Playhouse. And it is running Thursdays through Saturdays, October 15th through 17th, and then the following two weekends. And Sundays are at 2 in the afternoon.
That's right.
And the evenings are at 8 in the evening. And Thursdays are pay-what-you-wish nights.
And on Friday night, October the 23rd, after the evening performance, there will be a post-show discussion where the audience is invited to speak with me and some of the actors with any questions that you have about the production.
Very interesting. So if people want more information, what's the number?
The number at the box office for the Santa Fe Playhouse for The Lion in Winter is 988-4262. That's 988-4262.
Call now.
Please.
Make your reservations. Suzanne, it's wonderful to have you on the air.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. I always enjoy being on your show.
We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR.